All right, welcome back. This is the week you missed. We got a special emergency finance edition. Why? Because the banks are collapsing. I'm losing all my money. If this episode cuts out in the middle of it, it's because I can't afford the cloud fees, whatever, all of that anymore. Just kidding. I don't have any money in the bank, but that's what a lot of companies were saying on Friday, that they're not going to be able to survive. There was people like Bill Ackman or Gary Tan saying this is a crisis that could pull back innovation 10 years. I call bullshit. I call that these people just had investments that, hey, if the government didn't save all these depositors, guess what? I bet you bridge loans would have saved them and they could have found a loan from some bank, and everyone knew that the assets are there. It's just going to take time to figure out whatever. And some of these companies would have had to figure shit out for 6 months and stressed a little, whatever. I personally don't really support that. I know a lot of people are going to say, you don't understand finance, this and that. I understand enough. And my main point that I'm focusing on is, what's the point of FDIC insuring 250K if FDIC is going to insure 100%? If they're just going to insure 100%, why do we even have the 250K? What's that mean? It seems like it's a made up number if it's just going to be 100% at the end of the day. That's number one. Number two, and I feel like I think you know more than a lot of people that I am confused with a lot of my views, and I go back and forth because I don't agree with both sides. Both sides seem ridiculous, whatever. So like at one point I was, I'd say, leaning a little bit more capitalist and saying, yeah, people get loans or funds because they produce. And like, I do understand that point of view a little bit. You're not going to, you give $1 million to someone who's more likely to give the million back, whatever. But my argument to that is there's so many poor people who've never had the chance to produce because they've been experiencing trauma, or they've been so stressed, or they've had to work bullshit jobs to feed themselves instead of having like a little bit of time a day to create and to produce like on their own and whatnot. And it's like, all these people are this big bank and all these people are getting free loans, interest-free loans in the billions of dollars total. What if we gave billions of free loans to poor people? I don't know. Maybe like there'd be some dope shit that comes out of that. And instead they're like, no, we need this innovation. I'm cool with waiting 10 years for the next Uber. Cause guess what? I don't think Uber really improved our lives that much. At first it looked like it. Uber takes just as long as a taxi took when it first came out. Like, Ubers take 20 minutes now. Ubers are more expensive than taxis when they first came out. So like the two things that Uber promised aren't there. And guess what the kicker is? Uber's never even made money. So who the fuck cares? Like there's nothing good that's came of Uber. So people are like, oh, but Y Combinator has 1,000 companies that aren't going to be able to make it. And that's so much innovation. Who cares? Like, it's not a big deal. We can wait 10 years.
Well, and it's one of those things too. It's like, if the next great food delivery app is, you know, goes under, is, you know, it's sort of like if a tree falls in the woods and no one's there to see it, doesn't make a noise. It's like, you know, like, look, it would suck. Like if there's like bioengineering or like revolutionary, like nanotechnology healthcare companies that are going under, like, yeah, that might have an impact, but like, I'm pretty sure that's probably a minority of the VC
and
space.
They're going to get a bridge loan. Those people will get funding. Yeah. If it's an actual viable idea, they'll get funding.
Well, and I think that's the thing that a lot of people that like a lot of people, you know, and you and I probably know this, but like in the VC space, most of these companies that were like banking with SVB were never going to succeed. They're going
to die. Yep.
They're going to be sold for parts within the next 3 to 4 years anyways. Like what happens with so many of these venture funded enterprises is it's like, oh, well, this didn't work out, or the team ended up sucking. So now we're going to sell all the assets for 20 cents on the dollar to other companies that can use their technology or use their hardware that they developed or whatever. Like And then the VCs write it off as a loss and on to the next. Like, the idea behind venture capital is you make bets on like 10 different companies, expecting basically 9 of them to fail and 1 of them to pay off 100x. Yep, and like, that's exactly how the economics of VC investing typically works. Like, it's not like these venture capital funds are picking 100% winners. They pick mostly losers. It's just that when they pick a winner, it's something that has such high scale and ability to grow that it more than covers all the losers they funded. And so it's, you know, it, I don't know, like the whole thing is just, it's just crazy. And I think it's the one thing that is interesting is that the reason that SVB got into such trouble is that they tied up all their money in these long-term, or these treasury bonds, and they bought them when interest rates were low. And so they weren't able to unload them now that interest rates are high, because inflation has pushed these bond rates so high that no one wants to buy a treasury bond with a 1% interest rate anymore. So it's like, it's almost this ironic thing where if they had invested their money differently, or maybe in assets that were like slightly more risky, but that paid higher, they might've been able to liquidate assets better. And another thing I saw, and I don't know if this is just like a right-wing swipe at the Biden administration, but apparently like SVB and other companies that were investing heavily in these, you know, low interest rate bonds were basically being told like, oh, inflation's not going to be really a big thing. Like, you remember when inflation first started taking off, and they're like, this is transitory. It's not here to stay. It's going to be reined in 6 months. It's going to be reined in 8 months. It's going to be reined in 10 months. And then it turns out it's like, oh no, this is sort of continuing to be a thing, and now interest rates are rising. And it's like, so it's in, and again, it's the people that were actually sort of paying attention and knew how like inflation worked was like, this interest is not going to, or this inflation is not going to be transitory. It's like, we had been pumping money into the economy. We're just opening up. All these people had savings. Everyone's spending all the money they hoarded during COVID. And it's like, that's an inflationary spike. Right. So I don't know, but it is just disappointing, because it's like, I think you're absolutely right. It's, you know, at this point too, you know me, I lean sort of more right than you, and I'm very much into capitalism. But at the same time, like, I have trouble looking at this and being like, look, if we could take $50 billion and plow it into, you know, the Philadelphia school district, or helping youths, or basically being like, you know, I don't know. And the thing is,
fentanyl, let's fight fentanyl. Or like the drug problem, like, yes, let's help, like, help all those people and rehab them, whatever. The amount of money that's being loaned here is so much that can be used for so much else, but no, the banks just have to survive, whatever. And then I guess what I'm curious is, like, why are these people ever going to stop? Why would you stop if, like, if you can risk as much as you want, and at the end of the day, it's not going to get you in trouble or whatever? Like, this is obviously going to happen again, right?
Well, exactly. And it's like, and look, I don't necessarily blame the VC companies and everything else pushing for and asking for what they got, because any rational person would.
Right.
Like, it's a completely rational choice to make. The people I blame is the government.
Yeah, because exactly.
They could have said, no, hey, there's a giant private finance market out here. Go figure it the fuck out.
Yeah.
And again, look, I am happy that to some degree, like, it would have been very upsetting if they bailed out the SVB like bondholders and shareholders. Like, if you had money in SVB, your money's gone. You're not getting that back. Like, they're just covering depositors and everything like that, which it's. I still don't love it, but I can see the arguments behind it. But
I agree. I understand it. And I know it's not a bailout the way that things were bailed out in 08. But yeah, in my opinion, the word bailout means like you're helping them not fucking fail. That's kind of what they're doing.
Well, and especially because, you know, in the private equity industries and VC industries, like, there's this whole idea of like creative destruction, like creativity and innovation can come out of industries crumbling or things failing. And it's like, you know, there is a world in which when these things failed, it could have been a great reset and basically redirected capital away from companies that are probably going to fail in 2 to 3 years anyways. And just being like, well, you know what? this was sort of on shaky legs anyway, so we're just going to pull the plug now, and now we're going to redirect funds into our companies that are really showing promise or that right. really are delivering innovation. But now you, I mean, you've got so many startups that are like horseshit that do like, you know, and but they've got slick founders who are talented and they've got good developers, and it's like, well, maybe this could be a thing, but it's like, but what are you really adding? What value are you really creating? And you know, and one thing I saw that was interesting, because you brought up the point about like the FDIC and you know, what does it matter with these limits if they're just going to get backstopped anyways? And I saw someone, I forget who it was, but basically someone tweeted out or wrote a blog post about being like, maybe this calls for a rethinking of banking for people that have really, really like high capital requirements, and saying, instead of us paying interest on your accounts, you pay us a fee to hold your incredibly high balance and we insure 100% of it. So if you want to have $500 million in a bank account, you pay us 0.1% per year of your balance, but we will guarantee all of it. And then they're privately insured through like Lloyd's of London or whatever, or reinsurance. And they've got this, you know, you could have a whole private system that basically makes this point moot. And then the average American who doesn't have over $250,000 in one bank account is fine, covered by the FDIC, and it operates just like it is. Like, I think that's a pretty actually interesting idea, because it's like, look, if you've got 500 million, like Roku had, I think, $465 million in a single account. And now, yes, that's a big company, and that's probably their operating account or payroll or something. But it's like, that's like what, 200 times, 2000 times the FDIC limit? Like, that's nuts.
Yep. I agree. And I don't know. I'm just thinking, I don't want to say anything too dumb, but maybe you tell, I said it all the time. Maybe you tell companies like, hey, that's tax deductible or something, like you entice them. And it's like, we're probably going to save money by not bailing out these banks or by having all this financial calamity if we just have these systems in place. And it's like, I think that's a great idea. And I would hate to have a negative interest rate, because that's what it sounds like for people. But yeah, for high interest accounts, that sounds completely fine. And then it's like, banks can actually, and high value companies can make other moves. It just takes a little more effort. Yeah. All of these companies for the last year could have invested a little bit into gold, into silver, into like shorter term investments. They parked it into mortgage backed securities that they can't touch for 10, 20, 30 years, like a long time. That's what messed them up. But a little bit more focus and like just management would have been fine also. Like, this was an issue, but it was also, they just didn't do anything.
Well, and that is interesting, because like the mortgage-backed securities thing, that was a driver in 2008. This collapse was really driven by the fact that they were investing in the most risk-free asset you can have, these T-bonds, these T-bills that were paying only 1%, though, which means no one wants to buy them on the open market, and they're not going to take a haircut on them, and then here we have the collapse. Now, the other thing that I think there should be people in handcuffs or at least getting money clawed back is, you had the high-level executives of SVB
take money out,
selling off their stock in the weeks leading up to this. And apparently they literally, and I don't know if this is true, I read it on one source, apparently they paid out their bonuses to their executive team within hours before being taken over by regulators. Within hours.
That's criminal.
That like, those people, at the very least, they should get that money clawed back from them.
Yeah.
Like at the very least.
Do you have anything better for us this week, or What's the other problem that we're facing right now?
This story is a little bit old, and we sort of talked about it, but it's changing. So I wanted to get your thoughts on it. So remember, you know, the Nord Stream pipeline that got blown up. And when it first happened, like a year ago or 8 months ago or whenever, the first thing was, oh, well, Russia did it. And it's like, well, that doesn't make sense, because it's Russia's pipeline. And if they didn't want to deliver gas through it, they can literally just flip a switch on the supply side and then no gas runs through it. So why would they blow up their own infrastructure? And there was actually, I believe it was literally at the time it happened, in a now deleted tweet, I believe it was someone from like a Polish government official or like a Polish ambassador that basically tweeted out like, thanks to the US for blowing up this pipeline, but then quickly deleted it. Because I think his assumption was like, obviously the US would have done this, because it's like a move.
It makes the most sense.
Hurt Russia. Now, then about a month ago or few weeks ago, the Seymour Hersh guy comes out. He's the one who he's a journalist who revealed the My Lai massacre, I think, as well as some other big stories, and typically a well-regarded journalist. And he basically said the U.S. did it. He had a single anonymous source, so obviously a little bit shaky, like, if we're being realistic. But again, the story sort of intuitively made sense because everyone from the beginning said, if anyone blew up this pipeline, it couldn't have been random terrorists. Like, this had to be a government-backed action. And really, it was like,
a lot of governments aren't even capable of it.
So it was basically, like, from what I remember, it was like five or six countries could have done this. It could have been like China, Israel, the US, France, or Russia. And like, well, Russia's not going to do it.
I think, Finland, you said?
Or like, no, France.
One of the Nordic countries, I think, can, because of like their sea abilities.
Probably as well. But regardless, so about a week ago, the New York Times came out with a story that says, it's very likely that a pro-Ukrainian group blew up the Nord Stream pipeline. Now, Jeremy, would you define the U.S. government as a pro-Ukrainian group?
I would say they are the pro-Ukrainian group.
Exactly. And it's like, and now everyone's like, now the New York Times has, and it's like, oh, well, that makes sense. It makes total sense. And it's like, I guess the point I'm trying to make here is just like, you need to understand how often you're being gaslit by the media and by the government, because a year ago, or whenever this first happened, if you had said the U.S. government did it, you would have been called a psycho. If you had said a pro-Ukrainian group did it, you would have been, well, they would never do that because it's such a possible escalation and it's going to make Russia mad, or it's going to really inflame things. And now it's like, well, obviously a pro-Ukrainian group did it. All the same people who have the Ukrainian flags in their bios that were telling you when this happened that there's no way a pro-Ukrainian group would have done this, impossible, are now basically accepting it as fact. And it's like,
same as the lab leak. The same thing as the lab leak.
I mentioned
something similar to very respected Facebook friend I have, like, super smart guy, seems to know more than a little bit about like everything. He can kind of comment on everything, and like, you look it up, you verify, he definitely knows what he's talking about. And I actually asked him recently, like, how he thinks the way he thinks, because it's obviously different. He has a very good, like, point of view on stuff. And I wish I remembered specifically what it was, but he was, like, trained in this way of thinking. But long story short, what I asked him, like, or I mentioned about the lab leak, and I was like, it's kind of messed up that there's 18, like, government agencies, and it's, like, 9 of them say one thing and 9 of them say another. And actually, not even that. There's, like, 3 say one, 4 say another. There's so many opposing views. And then he said this next thing, and it kind of flipped my head instantly. I was like, oh. He's like, isn't that good? He's like, wouldn't it be a bad thing if everyone just said the same exact thing and there's no question about it? And I was like, you know what? I guess that does make sense. And he's like, a lot of these agencies have different information. And when we were talking about the lab leak, he's like, the Department of Energy used to actually be in control of all of these like chemical labs and whatnot. So he's they developed them. They were the ones who actually like started them, whatever he said. But he was like, they probably have a lot of information that the FBI doesn't, because the FBI probably just knows about these whatever. And the CIA has their own information about the government in Russia, blah, blah, blah. So he's like, they're all playing with different information. And it's kind of good that they're not saying the same thing, because if they're saying the same thing, that's pretty sketchy too, of like, why are they all saying the same thing? Like, it can't be that. So like, I don't know. I understand both sides. I do think the fucking pipeline was definitely done by us, or done by someone at our direction. Like we said, Finland, go do this.
The one thing that I'd bet all my money on is that the US was at least aware it was going to happen. Right. Or knew about it. Like, it was either someone told them, hey, we're going to do this at the very least, and they did nothing to stop it. There is no way, because we have supplied more money to Ukraine, I believe, than every other country combined. Like, this is basically our war that we're funding. Mm-hmm. And when I say our, I mean the U.S. government. And
oh, you're part of the U.S. government now?
But it's, you know, I think it's the key is, and to double back to sort of like your buddy and all this, like, and this is just sort of the natural contrarian in me. And I feel you're probably a little bit the same way. Like, anytime when something comes out and everyone is in alignment and everyone is saying the same thing, I immediately go to like, well, what if that's not the case?
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's so rare that you have widespread agreement on anything between lots of differing voices. And I remember there's a great scene, and it's actually, I believe it's in the book too, in World War Z. It talks about the Israeli government, that after the Holocaust, that the Israeli government installed a policy that when they're discussing issues, if a group of 10 people are discussing a topic, and if 9 of them agree on one solution or one explanation, it is the duty of the 10th man to disagree with them and to say, well, what if that's not the case?
I like that.
And in the case of World War Z, it was basically, it's like they had a group of 10 people discussing whether or not zombies actually existed. And everyone was like, no, it's no way. And then it was the one guy's job to be like, well, I have to assume now that they do exist. And it ended up in the book and in the movie with Israel being extremely well prepared for the plague outbreak of zombies and them being able to defend themselves better than many other countries. And it's like, I don't know. It's just sort of that thing. It's like, I'm not to say that like you immediately opt in if everyone's saying one thing, but like if everyone around you is saying that this is obviously what happened, you're not insane to think that like, well, what if they're not right? What, right. Like, as a thought exercise, what if these people are wrong? Now, it's not to say you whip out your tinfoil hat and assume like, well, obviously the opposite is true, but at least asking, well, what if it was true, or what would need to happen for the opposite to be the case?
Yeah.
Like, I think that's something that I think smart people engage in to some degree, because, you know, it keeps you sharp. If nothing else, just going through the thought exercise and saying, well, what would it take for this not to be the case? Or what would it take for the opposite to be true? It's an interesting thought experiment. And I think it keeps you sharp versus instead of just falling in line all the time.
Yeah.
And I think, look, with the lab leak, like, fucking pay it off. Like, I will eat my hat if it turns out that lab leak, if the lab had zero to do with the outbreak of COVID.
Yeah.
So,
it seems like we're not going to ever really know conclusively too, because there's always going to be someone who says otherwise, whatever. But back to the pipeline, are we going to know about that, or is that going to be the same thing too? Most likely,
this is the sort of thing that like you and me, when we're like 85 years old and documents get declassified, or some like government, you know, changes hands and releases these classified documents, like it's possible that we will eventually know what happened. Just like it's eventually possible that we'll know who, you know, what the details around Kennedy's death actually were. Like,
you think we're gonna know that eventually?
I think on a long enough timeline, almost anything is possible. I mean, like,
because
the thing is, like, and the thing with, you know, China, when the USSR fell and you had all these countries that were formerly occupied by the communists that didn't want to be occupied by them, they had KGB stations. They had all these files from the Soviet leadership in their countries. So when the USSR fell, there were revelations that came out of documents from these countries that are like, yeah, we hated them too. And if you want to look at all their top secret shit that we still have in filing cabinets, go nuts. And it turned out that like a lot of stuff that had been speculated about was confirmed. So I think that, you know, if there is a day and age when the communist, the PRC is overthrown or is replaced by some sort of democratic rule, that you could have something that's like, look, as part of us reforming, we are opening up these archives, or we are releasing details about what we actually did to the Uyghurs, what we actually were doing to oppress our citizens, how we were actually spying on Americans via TikTok, how we, you know, what actually happened with COVID. I mean, I think these things are all possible. I think it's unlikely. To be clear, I think it's very unlikely. I think the most likely scenario is that all of us die without ever knowing actually what happened at COVID, with COVID.
That makes that kills my mood. That's the only. What's the point of living? I just want to know all the secrets. It's crazy because I used to want, when I was young, and I'm still young, but when I was younger, I used to be like, "Damn, I really want to know like if there's aliens, or I really want to know like who built the pyramids." And I still really want to know those, but there's like 3 mysteries when I was young. There's like 8,000 mysteries now that I'm like, what the hell went on? I want some of them to come out because it's fascinating, but I don't know. I think technology is getting us to a place where some things are going to come out, but I don't know if we can handle it. That's part of the problem, is when these revelations come out, they cause people to argue, because it's wild shit. Like, what if they prove that Jesus never rose? That, like, because that's possible, but that would flip the whole world upside down. So it's like, you kind of can't do that. What if they proved that there were people 100,000 years ago? Or one of my favorite ones, supposedly the US and Russia in the 60s, at like the height of the Cold War, had an agreement, like this classified agreement. And it was after like we went to the moon, supposedly. And basically, it's that they think that on the moon, there's people who think this. I kind of believe, I don't know. There's people who say on the moon, the astronauts saw symbols that were like Earth symbols, like let's say Aramaic or Hebrew or sure. even English pictures, whatever. And like, I guess Russia somehow knew this also from maybe some sharing, in, I don't know, but they basically had an agreement like, we can't let anyone know
talk about this
because it'll like, flip the whole world insane. Yeah. Like people would go fucking batshit crazy. And then supposedly the India and China, I think in the next decade, are planning to go to the moon. And supposedly they're going to live stream it like in real time at like, and like that would be incredible. Like what if we actually figure something like that out? That would be wild. God bless you.
Yeah, man. I mean, I don't know, like the amount of, and it's so interesting because at the end of the day too, like I'm a firm believer in like Occam's razor. Like oftentimes the simplest explanation is the actual explanation. And so like, it also wouldn't shock me if, like, I guess what I'm saying, it's like, I don't let myself get like tied to complete certainty in very few things. Like, look, it wouldn't shock me if it turned out that Russia did blow up their pipeline. I think it's like a 1% chance. But at the same time, if it came out that Russia thought this was going to be some sort of 4D chess move and they were going to do it and like try to pin it on a pro-Ukrainian government or whatever, like, okay, right. Like I could see how that might happen. I don't think it did. If I had to choose, I wouldn't choose that. But at the same time, it wouldn't shock me. And at the same time, it wouldn't shock me if there was nothing crazy about the moon and that it was just the moon. And it, you know, it is a split off piece of Earth after a bunch of asteroidal impacts or whatever. Like, I don't know. But agreed. I think it's just, you know, it's best to keep an open mind and it's best to not, when things aren't proven beyond sort of a reasonable doubt or beyond a shadow of a doubt, that at least thinking about like, well, what would the explanation be if it went the other way? Or how mm-hmm. could this work? Like, I think it's something that just will keep you sharp and keep you from being duped and keep you from being manipulated just a little bit better.
I agree. So last question of the day, I'm going to revert back to my topic. Any more bank? I think we've had 4 total bank collapses so far, 3 this week, 1 from a little bit ago. Are any more going to come about this week?
I don't know. I mean, you know, look, I'm not a finance guy, so I can't tell you the ins and outs. But, you know, I think that I think that what we're going to see is a lot of people not learning lessons that they could have learned. I think we're not going to see a reduction in super risky behavior. I mean, yeah, I hope
that's
we do.
Like guaranteed.
Like, I think what we, like, the thing that I think we'll see out of this is an increase in government regulations that don't actually do what they say they're going to do. Because, like, that's always the thing. It's like, because we were supposed to have regulations in place after the 08 crash that prevented things like this. But you know what banks do? You know what private companies do? They figure out ways around it because that's what they do. Because the government regulates and then the private sector figures a way around it. And the fact is that the people in the government also make money from getting from banks and these companies getting around these regulations because they're all invested in them. So, you know, the oligarchy that runs this company, that runs this country between the high level politicians, the government and, you know, strong, powerful corporations. Like the one thing I know is that they're never going to let themselves fail. They're always going to make sure that they win. Or that they aren't getting the short end of the stick, which that's a story as old as time and that I think everyone will agree on. So what do you think? You think we're going to see more ripples of this or you think we're approaching the end?
I'm rooting for it, man. I think this is the biggest event that can help equality of anything is like if we all start at zero, that's equality. So I'm for it. I want banks to collapse. I want to start zero. I want actual value to come out. All this inflated fake pump and dump value of people buying this to buy this to buy this to buy this when there's no actual value there, it's just unnecessary. Like, let's just wipe all of that excess out. I don't feel too much sympathy for these people. I see all these articles like every week about like, oh, I got fired from my $500,000 Facebook job. It's like, you're fine. Like, why is this an article? You're fine.
Yeah. Like if you had been aggressively saving for 2 years, you could probably live for the next three. But my guess is you were busy jet setting around the world, flying first class, and probably not spending your money too well because you thought the good times were never going to stop.
Exactly.
But yeah, no, I think it's, you know, I don't know. I hope that we do see, hopefully we do see, if nothing else, a thinning of the herd of some of these venture-backed companies, that they're going to pull the plug on them sooner rather than later, than just letting them continue to limp on for 2 years before they, so that we can actually start focusing and investing in the companies that are going to bring, you know, society-changing innovation. Because, mm-hmm. you know, I know for a fact that there are some VC-backed companies that it would probably be bad if they failed and went under, that they probably were working on some cool stuff. I think it's a very small minority of them.
Yeah, I agree.
But that's just how this market, that's how this business and this industry works. So it would be a shame to see actually valuable companies and actually innovative companies go away. But I won't care if that this leads to just companies that were going to fail anyways being, you know, killed off 2 to 3 years or 5 years before they would have otherwise.
Yep, agreed. So actually, I have one last closing thought on this March 3, third month, 14th, 314. My love.
Oh, it's Pi Day.
It's never ending. My love for you is never ending, like pie. Never ending. You got it before I even said it. Awesome. Have a good Pi Day. I hope you eat some pizza and some apple pie. And it's also Steak and Blowjob Day. Did you know that?
No, I did not know that.
1 month after Valentine's Day is Steak and Blowjob Day. So that's an important one. So make sure you celebrate as much as you can. Have a good one.
We'll see if I can reach it myself. We'll see what's going on. See ya.